Your Kind Prison. A supernatural story, written by Whitmer Rule and read by Calcurea. Humans talk of the fall as if it were one finite event, one story alone. But Lucifer was not the only archangel to fall. Each of them fell, one by one, in their own way. Some of them fell many times. And now the sky is full of falling stars, falling angels. The last archangel watches them fall and has to make a choice between continuing as he is and learning, teaching all of them, to write a new story to set against Metatron's. Chapter 1. Lucifer. My father left me long before Michael locked me in the ice. I remember the sweetness of the light when the world was young. Silver wings and silver air and my father's voice. I remember the wonder of water when that was new, the way it broke and softened and twisted light. It is still a miracle, even now. But that isn't the story you want, is it? You want to hear about me, about the morning star and how he defied God and righteousness, became devil. You have always wanted that story. You have always made something of it for yourselves. I'm never myself in your stories. I am always a metaphor for your own failings or your fears. Your holy books, your poetic Milton and your epic Dante, your bawdy tales and philosophy. I have been locked away for thousands of your years, and you write about me still. You use me for your own purposes, and not one of you has heard my voice. Your stories, so obsessed with filth and petty cleverness in your own anatomy, what did those stories ever know of me? Here's one. My father was great, once, in the beginning of things, when life was pure as silver. But he was wrong, once, obsessively and hopelessly wrong. And I endured it for years, while he became quieter and quieter, until he never spoke to us at all. All for you. Are you not well beloved? There is music in the pit, you know. Souls sing and wail and speak and shout. They play music stored in their heads, full orchestrations, or with the remembered shouts of passing hawkers in the street, to pass the time between blades, or to distract themselves. They tell stories, and I hear them all. I heard the righteous man break, and I heard him cry out for my true vessel, and for his father. You'd be surprised how easy it is to keep up with current events down there. Messiah. Handel wrote an oratorio about that strange Nephilim of Gabriel's, the one that Michael was so obsessed with. He of whom some amongst you made a religion. One recitative asks, "Unto which of the angels said he at any time, 'Thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee'?" And then the choir, joyful and triumphant, "Let all the angels of God worship him." Worship. As if we should rejoice that my father said that to one human child, and never to me. And I spoke. I tried to love you. Some of you, and some of you loved me, but your love was a pale, squabbling shadow. And I shouted to the skies, to the heavens, to my father whose face I could not see. I told him that he was wrong. And he did not speak to me, even then. He did not have the courage to strike me down himself. It was by my brother's hand. It was my brother's mouth, my beloved brother, who told me that our father had no further use for me. For me, who stood before him first of all the world. His first. And his most perfect.
Silver and red. Blades and bars and ice stained red. Silver and red. And beyond that, the blackness of...
Many of you are beautiful, in one way or another.
but together you are a deformity, a mess of indignities muddying my father's silver waters and each other. You blame me for hell, but I only housed you. The demons built themselves, built each other. There is nothing in them that did not come from your own souls.
You understand, don't you? You understand. It doesn't matter whether you do or not, of course, because you are only what you are, you frail, fractured things, but you understand.
I am not this. This was not the right story. I did not leave. I was cast out. And he never even spoke to me.
The sky above, the water stretching out dark and beautiful to the horizon, both streaked with shooting stars. But they weren't stars. Until the stars fall. With a blue silk skirt tied around her hips, and another more firm around the breast she was wearing today, and the charred corpse of a water dragon at her feet, Gabriel watched the second fall, and did not understand. No better than she had understood the first. One bright streak fell into the deep, flailed, and sank. Gabriel watched the light of its burning flicker and dim through the salt waters. Then she pulled it out, and laid it gasping at her feet beside the slaughtered monster. It was mortal. She dried it with a snap of her fingers. Exposure, shit. And left it there in the sand and rocks. She walked around the island, felt the cold sand bite at her bare feet, saw them falling. Some she pulled from the water and off the roads, and others she left where they fell. None fell far out into the water, and none died of the impact. This was no accident. Not falling, precisely. Nothing of accident, or of their own volition. They were being cast down, to some particular purpose. But the stars fell as far as the human eye could see, and when Gabriel reluctantly unfurled other senses, senses that she had kept strictly under wraps for years, because there were some things she didn't want to know about, they were falling all over the world. The world felt vaster than she remembered. And that made no sense, because her memory was perfect. The water curled around her thighs, smooth and silver in the moonlight. It rippled pale gold where it caught the fire of the falling, and quenched it. How strange the world was, still. The wise thing to do would be to ignore this. Hell, she'd earned it. Stood up to Lucifer, hadn't she? And got herself shivved. Spent the years since tidying up after that mess, after all the global disasters he'd made with just a few short hours in Sam Winchester's skin. And if there had seemed to be more monsters to destroy as time went by, not fewer, was that any reason to lift her head out of the sand? The apocalypse had been her business, just barely, and that was over. She'd earned a quiet little limited retirement, where she never looked or inquired beyond the limits of her human eyesight and the hot spray of arterial blood across her face. Hadn't she won the right to cut the fucking ties? She should ignore it. She had work still to do, and burying herself this time around had taken a hell of a lot more effort and blood than turning into Loki, or into any of the other hundreds of cells she'd been in her time. Instead, she sought out the tiny beacon she'd planted in a big black car almost 10 years ago, stared around for one blank moment at the broken serenity of this tiny world, then snapped her fingers. Dean Winchester was in a hospital. No surprises there. For a moment, Gabriel considered a male body, cowboy boots, a doctor's coat, and that arrogant stride. But there was no point in tipping her hand too soon. Better something a little closer to home. Someone he'd confide in. Someone who could ask him what the hell was going on without all the shouting and swagger and antagonism that Dean would throw at a man. She pulled a face from his recent memory. Young, sweet, female. Not what Gabriel would have expected of Dean's type, but colored in his mind with affection and trust. cloaked herself in it, and ran down the deserted white corridor to meet him. He was pacing. Desperation curled off him in waves, and she clamped down on the strange little kick in her chest at the sight. Dean Winchester always looked larger than she remembered him. Just a trick of the mind, of association. He was only human, after all. But when he looked up and saw Gabriel, his face flushed over with nonsensical relief, with something like love, and his soul reached out to touch. So Gabriel did as he seemed to expect and collided with him, tucked this small body into the fierce warmth of his, and held on tight. Not a word exchanged, and already the ass was throwing her off her game.
"Charlie,"
he was saying into her hair, and now Gabriel had a name.
"Charlie, how did you—"
"Angels," Gabriel babbled into his chest, fleshing out mannerisms and speech patterns more easily now that this girl was at the forefront of Dean's mind. "It's angels, right? Angels falling, and Dean, what the frack is going on out there?"
"Angels,"
Dean confirmed grimly. One hand cupped the back of her head, tipped it back so he could see her face. And what had gone down in Dean Winchester's life that he greeted a girl Gabriel had never even heard of with careful love, not lust and manly postures?
"Dunno exactly what went down, if it was Cass or—" "You okay, Your Highness? How bad is it out there?"
"I'm good." And she leaned up to press a kiss to the side of his mouth, warm and soft, and just a little bit hungry, like this girl would kiss. Just a bit freaked out, I guess. Yep. The only warning she had was a flash of fight, flight, sharpening Dean's mind into focus. Then she was being shoved backward into an empty room and slammed across the wall with an arm across her throat.
"Get out of her!"
Gabriel laughed, slid a foot along his, and looked down at her body. "Didn't hit this, huh? Too bad. It's cute. Not so busty as your usual fare, and doesn't really have that I could eviscerate you with my little finger charisma I like in a woman, but I could have done with a little fuck today." And it was true, too, she realized as she sat up. The kiss had been good. Tempting, soft as it was, but now with the hard length of his body against her, the thrum of violence pulsing through them both, this, oh, this, she wanted. Dean's face went murderous. Gabriel smirked at him, batted her eyelashes, and blew him a kiss. "Tone it down, Dr. Banner. It's a glamour. Pull the face out of your head."
"What are you?"
"Baby, do you really care right now?" She pressed her body against him, arched her back, and grinned dark and dangerous. And his face contorted with revulsion, then froze.
"Abaddon,"
he said, flat with fear.
"Charlie's your new meat suit. Hard on for redheads, is it?"
"Well, fuck." She whistled. "You yahoos let the night out? Down and down the zombie rabbit hole we go. Feed me salt, shortstop. Or hell, whip out that blade you've got in your belt and take a stab. Not a demon." The pressure on her neck lessened, but only marginally.
"You're a fallen angel."
"Only metaphorically," she purred, and leaned in to run her hands up his sides. "You want to fuck or talk?" The ferocious energy in him lost its focused edge, went restless and directionless again, and that she could work with. Fucking was an excellent direction for rage and helplessness.
"Not with you looking like that,"
Dean growled, like he thought holding out was somehow useful. "Fine." She changed her likeness for Lisa Braden. Dean punched her. She let it land, laughing. He even let it break the skin. "Bad breakup, cowboy?"
"Shut the fuck up and get out."
Gabriel shook off that glamour and made another, the young Polynesian woman she'd passed as for a while last year. "I don't think you want me to do that, Rambo," and shoved him across the room. Dean lay on the bed where he landed, up on his elbows, legs half sprawled, watching her with narrowed eyes as she sauntered toward him. He made no move to fight,
far too unconcerned for a guy in his position. But they'd never rated high up on the sanity scale, these two.
Siren, then, huh?
If I was, she suggested sweetly, setting one knee on the bed between his thighs, don't you think I'd look like your brother right now? Or your little pretty boy angel? That earned a glare, another wave of fear and helplessness behind it. Only he's not an angel anymore, is he? My delectable stew of issues. He's something else. Something that you did to him. Dean closed his eyes, turned his head away like a suicidal freak, and swallowed. And there was something there that sent an unexpected stab of pain to that place where Gabriel's own grace lay carefully folded and hidden. Because surely Castiel wasn't actually...
Like I said,
Dean growled out, and his hands came up to clamp hard and firm on her hips.
The angels fell, and Cass ain't answering prayer mail. You want to tell me what that means, darling?
Got that memo. Saw the fireworks, thanks. What I need is details. Why? How? Who did it? How'd they go about it? And how the hell, pardon my Enochian, did things up there get to this point? 'Cause something tells me, my delicious little strawberry pie, that you're the man to ask.
You're not Crowley, are you?
You've been mixed up with Crowley?
What rock have you been hiding under for the last 5 years?
I was getting my face done. She purred, swung her other leg up to sit across his thighs, and leaned down to slide her hands up his chest. What did Castiel do, and where is he?
Thought you wanted to fuck.
She grinned, all teeth. Why, you offering? He flipped them, quicker than she'd expected, pinned her to the bed and rolled his hips into the cradle of hers. She hissed and arched into it. Slammed and locked the door with a thought and raked fingers down the back of his neck.
Why the hell not? Soon's you tell me how come you've still got your mojo, angel.
Who's pumping who for information here? He returned the grin, halfway savage, and caught her wrists.
Best pumping's mutual, sweetheart. Answer for an answer. How about it?
Well, apart from tricking him into trust or ripping it out of him, this was the quickest way. And it might yet get her laid. I told you, she purred into his throat. I was under a rock. Whatever went down, it must have gone down in heaven, or been targeted at it, because I didn't feel a thing. Your turn. She rolled them back over, straddled his hips, and dragged her shirt off over her head. Apparently busty enough for his dick, because his eyes snagged on her chest as it came free, and there was a satisfying throb against her ass. What was Castiel doing, last time you saw him? He swallowed, dragged his eyes back up from her delectable nipples, looked guarded, and fuck, whatever happened to womanly wiles?
Running off to get himself killed, apparently.
Not an answer, my sweet little muffin cake.
Yeah, well, close it you're getting until you answer this one. Castiel or Raphael?
She blinked. More politics, huh? He slid his hands up her sides, onto bare skin.
Put it this way. You down with the whole apocalypse deal? Wiping out humanity, keeping the earth for angels, that whole shebang?
That old chestnut? She snorted, leaned in to run her fingers up his chest, and barely remembered not to snap her fingers when she dismissed his shirt to the other side of the bed with a thought. Please, do I look like the kind of girl who wants to be stuck with just angels for company for the rest of eternity? He smirked, somehow triumphant like she'd proved a point she hadn't known was on the table.
That count as a question?
Your face counts as a question, she sneered, arched down to kiss him, deep and slow, to let her breasts fall forward against his chest and moan at the touch. He groaned into it, slid hot hands up her back to drag over her shoulders and press her closer, rocked up against her hips as if he'd forgotten she wasn't breakable. When he broke the kiss for breath, she stayed where she was, close, tasting his air against her mouth. His chest rose and fell beneath her as if every breath hurt him,
so very mortal that she ached with him. This was not going as planned. Work his weaknesses. Get the intel. Get out. Right. She drew back an inch or so and arched an eyebrow, all command and smirk. He couldn't resist a powerful woman. She remembered that much.
Him and another angel. They were going to close the gates of hell.
Dean said at last, eyes fixed on hers, all flirting and smartassery gone.
Seal all those feathery dicks away for good. Himself, too, if he had to. Thought it was the only way to fix the mess up there. Put it back in shape.
A breath, a sigh, and two hands sliding down her back to hover like a fucking gentleman's just above the waistband of her skirt. Like there wasn't a perfectly good ass right there for the grabbing.
Only the son of a bitch must have double-crossed him, because this wasn't what Cass wanted, okay? He wanted to fix his family, not...
Seal off heaven. She sat up slowly, the better to stare him down. He didn't flinch. Where'd they get the intel for that kind of party, huh?
Your turn,
he said, and set his jaw tight.
Can you fix Sammy?
Oh, well, that explained the hospital. And the fucking suicidal recklessness. Depends, she purred, and went for his belt buckle. Is it a paper cut to the thumb, or did the poor baby mountain swallow a pixie? He closed his hand over hers, stilled them. And hell, there was that fucking Dean Winchester trademark look. The righteous, pleading glare that had done for Gabriel more than once before.
Don't give me that smartass, I don't give a damn shit, okay? You care. You care a hell of a lot. I know something about the effort it takes for an angel to stay hid. And if I couldn't see it in your stupid smirking face, the fact that you broke your cover for this, came to a freaking Winchester of all dumbass moves. Not subtle, lady.
Last time they'd met, Dean had been halfway dead inside. Now his soul burned bright and sure, all wanting and warmth and fierce love. Desperation, too, just now, but Dean Winchester was almost healed. Dean Winchester, of all people, actually had a life now, and friends that weren't his brother or his fox, and it was good. While Gabriel had been... I'm not, she snapped, and then... I don't. And he wasn't even smirking at her over being fucking right every damn time. He was just watching her, fierce and kind of sad, with his thumbs rubbing stupid little circles against the backs of her hands. You pull this shit on every angel you meet, she growled at him, teeth glinting, and he swallowed, and his teeth went a little wider, and of fucking course that was on his list of kinks.
Only the ones worth reasoning with,
he shot back.
Can you do it? It's the trials. The trials to shut down hell. They've really... He pulled back to the middle of Kieran Crowley, only he's in a coma and they haven't got a clue here. Even just drag down his temperature, fix the physical damage. What the fuck ever. I'll take anything. He's a tough kid. If we can just give him a chance...
She kissed him to shut him up. It was vicious and biting this time, and it lingered, one hand dragging hard in his hair. Far more like the angry sex that this should have been from the get-go, and by the time she let him breathe, Dean was shaking, grinding up against her, and had finally, finally, gotten all the way to hard. You two just can't stop and rest, can you? She breathed into his mouth, and kept her eyes closed so she didn't have to see him.
Can you...
Lords of Kobol and their little pink silent babies. Maybe, okay? I'll try if you'll only shut up about it. My turn. Dean looked torn between exasperation and wild gratitude, which made her feel far too messy and human inside, so she pulled his dick out and squeezed it hard enough to make him stop. If I promise to take a look at your brother, to try, okay? Because I don't know if I can fix him, because fuck knows what you two muttonheads have been messing with. Will you shut your cake hole and screw me already? I'm horny, and I'm tired, and my family's falling out of the sky, and some stupid kid keeps trying to go all Jacques Lacan on me.
This is so fucking ridiculous,
Dean muttered, and caught her lip between his teeth. Then he kissed it, just once. You're right, she informed him, climbed off, kicked away her shoes, and dragged his jeans and briefs and boots off in a tangle. It's ridiculous that there's been no fucking. Get on with it.
You got a name, lady?
He asked, reaching for her as she slid back onto the bed and pressed him into the sheets with one hand.
Or do I just call you manipulative feathered dick number 600 and something?
Jibrail, she said, and smirked, because it was 10 to something much smaller than one that Dean Winchester had never bothered to brush up in his Arabic, the arrogant corn-fed homeboy. Call me Jibrail. And sure enough, there was no flare of recognition and fury in his mind, no stiffening in his body, just a hot hand around the back of her neck drawing her down, another running almost gentle down her spine as she sank down and took him deep, skirt pooling across his belly and down over her knees.
Fucking condom,
he protested, half a moan, and she smacked him around the head. Then she dragged his hands down and pinned them to the bed, hard. This is the part, she said, low and dangerous, and rocked her hips sharply forward to make him growl. Where you ask yourself, self, what could a creature that I know nothing about and never proved is even an angel want with sex? And when do things like this ever come that cheap, you clueless, trusting cretin?
Yeah, see, I don't care,
he panted, and grinned up at her far too sharply for amusement. Hitched up under her, a delicious drawn-out grind that had her clenching her fingers and her cunt down hard, hissing out a noise through her teeth.
Sold my soul for him once already. Tried to do it a few times more. Tapped out of closing the gates of hell for him just today. You really think I'm going to freak at sex, Feathers?
She narrowed her eyes and glared heavenly wrath. You need to shut up and fuck me, boy! Which, again, apparently a turn-on. After that, it was much simpler. Dean Winchester was really very pretty when he was pinned helpless and moaning to the bed, and he responded beautifully to being ordered around, and to being issued a challenge. Like when she decided she'd had enough of the fucking gentlemanly way he handled her, hands only tight enough to manhandle, not to bruise, and fucked up into her, hitting all the right spots, watching her like a hawk to make sure he got it all perfect, hard but nothing furious about it. All it took was a sneer, and, maybe I got the wrong Winchester, bet your brother knows how to fuck a girl like she isn't made out of China. And his jaw was set and she was tumbled over onto the bed with him bearing down hard on her back, one arm twisted up behind her. Then she was dragged to her knees, and yes, there, finally, the fury and the ferocity that she knew was inside him, let loose upon her, visited upon her body until she swore and laughed and screamed and could think of nothing else but him. When she came, hard and loud, she let him see the wing shadows. Faked, of course, but identical to human senses. Let him know that he was right in that much, at least, the idiot kid. And he groaned in relief and pushed her down into the bed and covered her body with his for a minute, catching his breath, still hard inside her. Then he left her empty and went kissing his way down her back, slower and careful. Reached her ass, spread her legs, and mouthed soft and deliberate up and down the insides of her thighs. She let him turn her onto her back, with one arm flung over her eyes to hide herself, and he worked her over in the way she hadn't given him the chance to do before, hands and mouth and tongue firm and thorough, all over her body, until she shuddered and groaned, trembled at every touch. Not kind and not gentle, but she didn't want that. And when it was almost too much, he pushed inside her again with his own sob of relief, shoved hard and firm into the depths of her, took her hands from her face and kissed that too, as if he cared. This time when she came, she didn't shout. It was something more like a sigh, which she could pretend he didn't hear because his face was buried in her neck and his own noises were an embarrassing mess. When she was done, he pulled out and finished himself off with a couple of strokes, warm and shocking on her belly where the skin was stupidly sensitive. Then he flopped down beside her and was quiet. Smug isn't a good look on you, she told him after a while, without looking.
Smug is adorable on me,
he corrected her,
smugly. When she opened her eyes, though, the smirk was paper thin, and behind his eyes she could see the clock ticking down. She let out her breath, because humanity was contagious, and got up to wipe herself off on the bedsheets and fetch her clothes.
"What?"
he said, dragging his shirt back on with half a cheeky grin.
"Not gonna snap us clean?"
It gave her pause, but many angels who were comfortable down here used finger snaps or some other little cue to show off, and many demons as well. And there had been no moment of shock that might mean recognition, not any point. Dean Winchester wasn't the kind of guy to work these things out subtle and slow, to keep his emotional reactions nice and steady in the way that might slip past Gabriel's notice. Was he? And if he had worked it out, there would have been a hell of a lot more in the way of fists to the face. So they dressed, a bit awkward, and covering it with bickering. And he took her to see Sam. It was a fucking mess. The flicker of his soul was weak, almost invisible in the writhing mess of hard magic and darkness that surrounded him. Not hell's contamination, not exactly. His blood was cleaner and purer than Gabriel had ever seen it, but he had made of himself a vessel for the darkness of heaven's power, the kind that mirrored hell because that was what it fought against. And without the outlet of the final trial, which, okay, would have killed him, but that was what it was meant to do, without that outlet it had turned back in on itself and was scouring Sam from the inside. Basically, his soul was turning into soul soup, and his internal organs would follow soon enough. It would be so much fucking easier not to care, because this was not Gabriel's business, and there was no way she was making it her business, because she had far more important things to do than to shield these two yahoos from the consequences of their own actions, okay? So she didn't ask why she found herself sitting down on the side of the bed, and laying one hand on Sam's forehead and another over his heart, and drawing on reserves of herself that she'd carefully kept untapped for a very long time. It was long and exhausting, and she was practically trailing beacons across the sky to anyone who had the eyes to see it, saying, "Hey, look, Gabriel is here!" But, well, nobody did they? Nobody angelic, anyway. And anyone else she could dodge. Probably. When she was done, the sky was light outside, and Sam was still dying. But it was better than it had been. "I can't fix him," she said abruptly. And Dean, slumped in the hard white hospital chair, raised his head from his hands to stare at her blankly. She looked away. "Not all at once, anyway. Not like this. But I healed the damage it's been doing to him. Physical, and the rest. It's still in him, but you've got time."
"Okay," Dean said expressionlessly. Then, "Okay. How much time?"
"Weeks. Maybe months. Give the boys vitamins, keep them happy and healthy and all that. It'll help, anyway."
"Okay,"
Dean said again. Then he scrubbed an exhausted hand over his face and stood up, came over to stare down at his brother.
"He looks better,"
he offered after a moment, reached out a hand halfway as if to touch his brother's face, then curled it up and stopped it.
"His color, you know."
"Imbecile."
"Shut up."
He looked at her.
"Metatron. He's the one. He's the dick who screwed Cass over. Told him the spell they were doing would close hell, only I figured he pulled a fast one and kicked out everyone but himself. Someone, Naomi, she warned us just before it all went down that he was out for revenge, only Cass didn't believe her because she, well, she was part of what he wanted to fix, you know?"
"Metatron. Metatron?"
"Yeah, you know him? Scribe of God and all."
"Scribe of my goddamn ass! Fucking secretary!"
"Gabriel's secretary? No wonder he'd known how to pull stunts like that."
"Talk about blowing your own trumpet! Heh,
Saw dogma and the like, but I never thought the whiny little prick actually had the balls to go and start calling himself the voice or the scribe or whatever the hell. Metatron. Of all people. Alone up there in heaven. Lording it over the place like... hell.
Really?
Dean sounded slightly dubious.
He told us he spoke to God. Personally, you know. Straight from the horse's mouth and all.
Gabriel snorted. Horse's ass? Calling himself an archangel too, is he? It was a question. Not rhetorical. But Dean's mouth quirked up just a bit at the corner. Then he squared his shoulders, crossed his arms, leaned back against the wall.
So, what's the plan?
My plan, Gabriel informed him sweetly, is to fix up my family's mess. Again. Because they're a great big bunch of dicks.
Okay.
Dean said carefully.
And Cass?
He is also a dick, Gabriel decided. But more of an innocent, bumbling idiot sort of dick than some others I could mention.
Right. Well, do you think you could...
What spell was it? Gabriel asked abruptly.
I don't know, man. This isn't Hogwarts. Hello. Huh. Expelliarmus. Right. Too soon. All I know is, the second stage, Cass had to get a Cupid's bow.
Fuck. That spell. Gabriel's day was just getting better and better.
If you find him,
Dean said, watching Gabriel's face closely,
tell him to ring home, yeah? I mean, ring us. Tell him... hell. Tell him to get his ass back to our place so we can see if he's okay. If, you know, if he's okay.
Gabriel pinched his cheek and made an isn't its emotional constipation adorable face. Dean batted her hand away and scowled. Be seeing you, she said brightly. Or not. Try to stay away from my siblings. They're probably pissed. Some of them might even have slightly more coordination than a mangled rabbit. Dean's jaw tightened, but he nodded. She resisted the urge to shove up against him and take another kiss. Take another everything. Hell, just stay here and hide. Because that wasn't her story. Not her part to play. She spread her wings and slipped away between the atoms. What next? How did you even begin? Collect them? Save them? Some kind of orphanage for bewildered ex-angels? And how the hell would she even go about finding them all? And then there was fucking Metatron. It was a whole new world. Nothing brave about it. But it had been a new world again and again and then again for the last several thousand years. And Gabriel had had to face every new world alone. She was past expecting him to turn up and give anything meaning again. A story that just goes on and on and on isn't a story. It turns into mush, without shape or reason. Like all those endings Tolkien just kept writing to the Lord of the Rings, until his publishers cut him off and took it out of his hands, because he was ruining it. And even then they'd had to cut out some of the published endings for the film. And even then that Honest Movie Trailer's YouTube channel had mocked the film for having too many denouements. The world had lost its author long ago. Now they all just had to trudge on. She was circling Colorado, watching the slow, magnificent sweep of clouds across the land, when she heard it. Heard Dean.
So you know, dude, you suck at undercover.
He prayed. Which, what?
Just find Cass, okay? And for your information, I would have told you anything you wanted up front if you just showed up with your own face on, you dick.
Well... shit.
Also, thanks for, you know. I'm still decking you next time I see you. For Cass's sake, dick.
She set her resolve and dove through the clouds to see if there were any left alive. The water drowns your guardian stars, and the night wills it should be so.
Chapter 1. Lucifer. My father left me long before Michael locked me in the ice. I remember the sweetness of the light when the world was young. Silver wings, and silver air, and my father's voice. I remember the wonder of water, when that was new. The way it broke and softened and twisted light. It is still a miracle, even now. But that isn't the story you want, is it? You want to hear about me. About the morning star, and how he defied God and righteousness. Became devil. You have always wanted that story. You have always made something of it for yourselves. I am never myself in your stories. I am always a metaphor for your own failings, or your fears. Your holy books, your poetic Milton and your epic Dante, your body tales and philosophy. I have been locked away for thousands of your years, and you write about me still. You use me for your own purposes, and not one of you has heard my voice. Your stories, so obsessed with filth and petty cleverness in your own anatomy, what did those stories ever know of me? Here's one. My father was great, once, in the beginning of things, when life was pure as silver. But he was wrong. He was wrong, once, obsessively and hopelessly wrong. And I endured it for years, while he became quieter and quieter, until he never spoke to us at all. All for you. Are you not well beloved? There is music in the pit, you know. Souls sing and wail and speak and shout. They play music stored in their own heads, full orchestration, or with the remembered shouts of passing hawkers in the street, to pass the time between blades, or to distract themselves. They tell stories, and I hear them all. I heard the righteous man break, and I heard him cry out for my true vessel, and for his father. You'd be surprised how easy it is to keep up with current events down there. Messiah. Handel wrote an oratorio about that strange Nephilim of Gabriel's, the one that Michael was so obsessed with. He of whom some amongst you made a religion. One recitative asks, "Unto which of the angels said he at any time, 'Thou art my son, this day have I begotten thee'?" And then the choir, joyful and triumphant, "Let all the angels of God worship him." Worship. As if we should rejoice that my father said that to one human child, and never to me. And I spoke. I tried to love you, some of you, and some of you loved me, but your love was a pale, squabbling shadow. And I shouted to the skies, to the heavens, to my father, whose face I could not see. I told him that he was wrong. And he did not speak to me. Even then, he did not have the courage to strike me down himself. It was by my brother's hand. It was my brother's mouth, my beloved brother, who told me that our father had no further use for me. For me, who stood before him first of all the world. His first and his most perfect. Silver and red. Silver and red, blades and bars and ice stained red. Silver and red, and beyond that the blackness of... Many of you are beautiful, in one way or another, but together you are a deformity, a mess of indignities muddying my father's silver waters and each other. You blame me for hell, but I only housed you. The demons built themselves, built each other. There is nothing in them that did not come from your own souls. You understand, don't you? You understand. It doesn't matter whether you do or not, of course, because you are only what you are, you frail, fractured things, but you understand. I am not this. This was not the right story.
I did not leave. I was cast out. And he never even spoke to me.